right, welcome to Card Knock Life, episode 36. I'm your host, Corey Murphy, here with your host, Gregor!
Hi.
That was me trying to say both your names at the same time.
And I, of course, said hi first because I need to be second now. I'm solidifying my place as chair number two.
So what you've interpreted that as just Nick.
What the hell just happened?
You guys were bitching last week.
Yeah, I was not bitching because I am cordially pleased that I am now second. Daryl was the one bitching that he wasn't making throat noises for getting second place.
That's right. So those were your throat noises, and you've been properly introduced. Anyways, Daryl's here too. Daryl, you're typing away back there.
I am.
You are.
He's in a space shuttle.
Daryl's scrambling to get his picks in before we do our what we're going to call our Pro Tour or Fantasy Pro Tour, alternative Fantasy Pro Tour at that, because everyone's got their typical, you know, pick your best small card and best large card and everything, but we're going to kind of put a spin on that. So that's what we'll be doing most of the episode. But first of all, I just want to talk a little bit about, you know, the weekend and everything. Do you guys play at all in the last couple of days here?
I jammed a lot of Modo.
Did you? Okay. Yeah, so did I.
Yeah. I may or may not have developed an obsession for Nick's Finance Goblin Dark Dwellers.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been playing Modern decks on Modo with this card.
Okay.
And I've been flashing back such hits as Blightning and Molten Rain. And boy, howdy, does it feel good.
So are you on the... There's a lot of people building this Goblin Dark Dwellers Boom Bust deck because you
can
Goblin
started
Dark Dwellers, the bust part of it.
So I started there.
Yeah.
The problem with that is it makes your deck, like, super suboptimal.
Yeah.
Because you have to play four Flagstones of Trocare. Mm-hmm. And then you have, like, Boom Bust, which is only good if you draw Fetchland or Flagstones. But then you have to wait till turn three unless it's Flagstones. Because, like, a lot of times Boom Bust is only good if you're on the play on turn two. Mm-hmm. Maybe on the play on turn three. But like on turn three on the draw, your opponents have got three lands. They've probably deployed a Tarmogoyf, maybe a Liliana. And so like Boom Bust is really bad. Yeah, and so like busting them is great if you can like mop up the board. But then that requires you to have drawn the right collection of like Terminates and Lightning Bolts and Path to Exiles to clean up your opponent's board.
Right.
And so I feel like the Boom Bust strategy is really bad. So, like, are you pretty weak game one to Affinity? Or not Affinity, but to Tron? Because all you really have is, like, you have a bunch, like, a few discard spells. And then you're just, like, trying to race them? Yeah, you're a little weak. But I played four Molten Rains in my sideboard. And so, like, turn three, Molten Rain. Turn four, Molten Rain. Turn five, like, Dwellers, Molten Rain. And then having, like, Restoration Angel to Blink Dwellers and Molten Rain them again. Like, you can do 8 damage with that, plus whatever early creatures you play. Like, if you're playing Soulfire or Dark Confidant or, like, whatever collection of things you're willing to try in this deck.
Yeah. So, do you ever do green and do, like, a Life from the Loam or anything in there?
I didn't try a Life from the Loam package. I wanted to double splash for Siege Rhino, but that was really greedy.
Yeah,
that's a little greedy.
Well, it was originally in the Boom Bust version, so you were originally blowing up all your lands and trying to cast Siege Rhinos. It was a little tough. Because you only had, like, 3 green sources in the entire deck, and so blowing up your lands might kill all your green sources. But, like, the Double Splash version, if you take Boom Bust out, was actually kind of solid, because it had, like, Dromoka's Command, and Abzan Charm, and Siege Rhino, and Tarmogoyf. And so, like, the problem was you could never really find a good 2-drop creature in Mardu, because, like, your best creatures were, like, Dark Confidant and Soulfire Grandmaster, which are very small creatures. You don't have a nice, solid body that you can, like, try and control the game with.
Right.
So I might go back to trying the Double Splash version, or I might just cut white, because white was just, like, Crackling Doom and Path to Exile. So I might just go to Jund and play Jund to Dark Dwellers.
Yeah. Jund, I think, is the best shell.
It might be, because I had forgotten, like, I had sort of obsessed over playing Crackling Doom, but, like, Restoration Angel is very, very good with Goblin Dark Dwellers, so I might be hard-pressed to drop white.
All right.
Like, I might be willing to splash white instead of splashing green. I don't know. But, like, Restoration.
Do you have, like, a link for the list or anything?
I can provide a picture of the list, most certainly.
Yeah.
I can provide a picture.
Sweet. I've heard a lot about this deck. I haven't seen a list, but I mean, I get.
Do you want the list and... with? Do you want the list with Boom Bust? Because I don't have a list with Boom Bust.
Oh, sure.
I just have a list of like the one I'm playing right now.
Yeah. Well, whatever. I mean, I would like to see a list with Boom Bust, but I'll put your list in the show notes so we can share that if you're comfortable doing that. Unless you plan on taking it it to the Pro Tour next weekend.
I might take it to regionals, I might take it to regionals this weekend. But
Do you want to regionals, Corey?
Is that this weekend?
That's this weekend.
What day? Where is it?
It's in Chicago in Saturday and Sunday, I think.
Okay.
Mine's in Baltimore, so I don't really have an excuse not to go, but, like, I don't.
Yeah, I don't know. I would like to.
Oh, I do have an excuse not to go. Damn it. Not going to regionals.
Oh, shit. Well, there it goes. I guess you can share the list then, huh?
Perfect.
We'll put Dirtle's Dark Dweller's list in the show notes, so look for it. There we go. All right. Well, Nick, you were starting to say something. What did you do this weekend?
I played Saturday Night Magic at a local game shop. I was playing Blue White Red mid-range. It's not like the typical mid-range list where you're like playing like Sphinx's Rebs and crap like that. It was
modern.
What?
Modern then, right?
Yeah, modern. Yep. It was Sphinx's Rebs and Standard. God, that'd be so broken right now, wouldn't it be?
Sure.
Anywho. I was playing like a lot of dudes, so I was playing four Meddling Mages main, because I think that card's very good now that like I think that most of the Bolt Snap Bolt decks are out of the format. I think that card is very good at handling the obtuse angles that like Affinity and Tron are trying to throw at. So been trying that card out a lot. Problem is a lot of my meta at that place is just like fair zoo decks, so like a 2/2 on turn 2 sucks.
Yeah. What are you gonna say, Nicotl?
I say Tarmogoyf or Tarkus Command most of the time.
It says can't be played. So, like, what's the Blood Rush guy? I mean, I know the Zoodex don't always play.
Gorklan?
Yeah, that activated ability can be played, though, can it?
Yes.
Does it say it can't be played or can't be casted?
I don't know. What does it say?
It doesn't matter.
Right, it doesn't matter, but yeah.
All
right.
Oh, there you go. That's something that's more expensive than 2 mana on that deck.
But playing like 3 Brimazes, 3 Geist. I think the Geist are going to be either Sphinxes or the 3/3 Flyer Vigilance Haste guy. Whatever that Jet Sky guy is called.
Mantis Rider. I was thinking of Lightning Angel, but yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
You might try Lightning Angel just because it has a 4th toughness if Lightning Bolt becomes a thing.
Right. But I think Brimaz fills that role better, and like I want my 4 drops to be Resto for like the flashiness of it, so then I can hold up like Snapcaster Remand or Snapcaster anything. I don't want to tap out on 4 most of the time. So,
very fair. Yeah.
Brimaz was an all-star. Holy crap, that guy is amazing. I remember why I loved playing him in Pod, but he is good stuff.
Suggest that might be something I try in the Goblin Dark Dweller's deck as like a creature because I'm having trouble closing the game.
Yes, like, he's very good.
Oh, okay. I'll give
like,
that a try.
The only thing he loses to is Tarmogoyf, but like everything else he beats. He beats like Kitchen Sphinxes both sides. He beats every creature in Zoo and then like makes a dude on top of that. So like he attacks, makes a dude, blocks, makes a dude. Like he.
Oh, he has Vigilance?
He's Vigilance. So is the cat token. The cat token he makes also has Vigilance.
Where have I been?
So he was just been pretty. Like, I want to probably play the 4th of him just because he adds so much offensive defensive power. And, like, he stabilizes the board pretty well. When you're at, like, 3 mana, then you just, like, bolt their dude on turn 1. And then turn 2, they play another dude. And you're just like, okay, on turn 3, I'll play this 3/4 Vigilance. Swing, I won't block, and then next turn I'll swing, make a 4-attack block, or 4-attack.
Yeah, attack for 4, yeah.
And then you still have the 1/1 Vigilance to block the next time they want to come at you. So, very good at stabilizing the board. Was very happy with him.
Cool.
Yeah.
I also played a little bit of MTGO. The League. I did like 3 leagues with Black-Red Dragons, and
Black Red Dargons.
I kind of switched up my build a few times. I did really shitty the first 2 times, and then started main decking some Duress and what's the 2 mana target creature gets -4/-4.
Grasp of Darkness.
Yeah, Grasp of Darkness. This card is very good. I was thinking that double black would be hard in that deck because it's, you know, it's really heavy on the red with like a lot of double red and like the phoenixes and stuff. But it hasn't been an issue because I can fetch out the Battlelands really easy.
Smolder and Marcia.
But holy cow, like the deck plays very tempo-y. Like you need your 1-drop, 2-drop, 3-drop, 4-drop in order to be successful. Otherwise, Planeswalkers just beat you. And I played against this black-white deck quite a few times. Like black-white control, I believe it is. It's kind of like close to like Hooglin's.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's exactly the same thing, but basically it's running like a bunch of Gideons. It's got like the... Not the Monastery Swift Spear, but the 2-mana white one. Not Mentor.
Nope. Oh, the Lifelink one?
Seeker of the Ways. Yeah, it's got the Seeker of the Ways. It's got, like, the Seeker of the Ways and stuff. The deck is crazy, and it just plays a shit ton of removal, like, 1-for-1 removal. And somehow, all their 1-for-1 removal was able to beat my, like, all my creatures that recur. Like, the Phoenix comes back from the graveyard, but they always have, like, Other Land waiting for it, or, you know, like, the Silk Wrap or something. So it was real.
Well, they pay, like, Painful Truths, don't they?
They do. They pay painful truths, and then they like fetch out like a Sunken Ruins or something to get it.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be a good matchup. But in games 2 and 3, I think maybe I'm just sideboarding wrong. But I wanted to bring in like all of my discard stuff. Like I wanted to bring in more Duress, and I brought in the one that exiles a 3 or greater cost card. What's that called? Help me out. It's from the last set. It's an uncommon black and a colorless sorcery.
Oh, the Devoid one?
Yeah.
Oh, Transgress the Mind.
Transgress the Mind. Yeah, the card is really good right now. I just wish it cost 1 mana.
Oh, that would be way too good.
But I would even give up the Exile part of it for 1 mana. And I'd pay 2 life when I did it.
Oh, so you want to play... You basically want to play Appetite for Brains.
I want to pay Thoughtseize.
I mean, yeah, that's a little... unfair, but all
right. Anyways, so that was my plan to get into that, and then I just like it didn't work out because I was spending my early turns doing that, and then in the long game I just get beat down by like Gideon. If you don't go first and they resolve a Gideon on time, it's really hard to beat that. He's just so much value and he does so much. He has such an impact on the board. It's like immediately he's got 4 counters on him, right? He starts with 4 counters, and so already you're plagued with dealing 4 damage to him on turn 4, right? If you're on the draw. And so not only that, but he also spits out a freaking creature that blocks for you, like really effectively. Like there are very few early drop creatures that are really more aggressive than a 2/2, you know, in turns 1 through 3 in standard right now. So best bet, like I just fly over top with like, the 4-mana Dragon Thunderbreak Regent. But even then it's like, they've got removal to back it up, or I've already been attacked by the stupid Gideon for 5 damage. Card is crazy. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, Gideon is not a bad magic card.
It's OP.
OP.
So, that's that. I'm in the middle of my 3rd round, and I'm 1-1. So, I didn't realize this, but when you do the leagues online, you play with a lot of people that are more competitive than your typical FNM players. And yes. So, the people that are involved in MTGO are a little more hardcore than that. So, going, like, 3-for-2 is not a gimme like it would be, like, in paper in a lot of shops.
No, dude, like, you're playing against grinders. Like, the last league I played in, I played against, like, I played round one, I played BBD.
Yeah. Wow.
I was just like, alright, I get to lose to BBD. I beat him. I beat BBD with 5-color control, and then I tanked the rest of the league. I went 1-4. Okay. But I beat BBD, so...
Yeah, there are a lot of really good players, and people spare no expense for their decks when they're playing the leagues and things. So if you go to the tournament practice room, you don't get a very good representation of the meta because you get a lot of random stuff and people are just trying shit out. But as soon as you get into the 2-man queues, but then even more the leagues, it's like, wow. I mean, let me tell you
about a deck that I lost to in the tournament practice queue, and then we can go to Fantasy Pro Tour.
Yeah, go for it.
I played against like blue white wizards.
In Modern?
Yes.
Okay.
And it was a combo deck, yep. And I can't even remember the crappy wizard that they killed me with. But it's like it's a 2-mana 2/2 that has pay a blue or white and untap it. Look at the top card of your library, you may exile it. And they combine it with like a random thing that's like whatever a merfolk you get control, because the merfolk wizard becomes tapped, you gain a life. So, like, they gained infinite life by looking at the top of their deck infinite times.
Oh, my God.
And then they played a Laboratory Maniac, exiled their whole deck, and Gitaxian Probed me.
That sounds bad.
I was blown away. He did have a sweet Trinket Mage package, though, because it involved Paradise Mantles, which was a zero-mana artifact that lets you tap for Burns Paradise. Yeah. Or turn your tune to Burns Paradise. Mm-hmm. And he like had a Trinket Mage package of like Engineer Explosives, Aether Vial, Relic of Progenitus, Pithy Needle. Like he game one Pithy Needled a Kiki Jiki, and I was just like, oh, well, that's awkward. Then I drew a Polygon's Command and killed him with the Restoration Angel.
You know, why is Wizards not more commonly tried as a tribe? There are so many cards that just happen to be a wizard that are really good. Like, we already play Snapcaster, which is a wizard. We already play Vendilion Cleek, which is a wizard. There's Dark a card... Confidence? Dark Confidant is? Okay.
Yeah,
there's a
card called Anathemancer is?
But Dalkin Aether Mage, that's two for a one.
It's a wizard flash. Cycler? Yeah, he wizard cycled that thing like four times.
Yeah, it's the card's insane. And then also, you can run Void Mage Prodigy, which is time shifted.
Pyromancer.
Young Pyromancer, there you go. Yeah. There are tons of wizards. So I think
Delver?
I think that wizard cycling and Void Mage Prodigy is enough incentive to run it as a tribe. Venser, Shaper Savant.
Delver is a human wizard. Yes.
Delver, there you go. I don't know if I played Delver in a creature tribal deck, but
no. You have no Lord is the problem.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, okay, there's no Lord that gives him +1/+1, but the deck doesn't play like that. It's going to play more like a Fairies deck with the Void Mage Prodigy and stuff. You know what that card does? It's blue-blue for a 2/1 wizard. You play blue-blue, sacrifice a wizard, counter-target spell.
Wait, there's no way that card was time-shifted.
It was time-shifted, guaranteed.
Oh my god, I didn't even know that. All right, That card's insane.
So are we gonna build mono blue wizards for next week? I say we all build a deck and then we battle with them.
So who's better?
Why not Grixis wizards?
Because you have to pay blue blue for Void Mage Prodigy.
So you like your base blue?
Yeah.
But like splashing for like Dark Confidant and Anathemancer.
Uh huh.
Because
Scavenger Souls then too.
Yeah, because Tron can't beat Anathemancer.
Jace Vryn's Prodigy is a wizard.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god, can we stop and move on to Fantasy Pro Tour now?
Insectile Aberration loses wizard, but keeps human.
It does.
So he's a human insect, but not a human wizard insect.
Correct. He's too dumb. He turned into like a just primal thing.
I don't know how he kept his human part, though. Like, just change it to insect. Like, he's all insect in that picture.
They didn't think that through.
Mayor of Avaprick OP with that.
Shall we go on? Fantasy Pro Tour.
Totally. Fantasy Pro Tour.
Nick, can we start with you?
Sure. So number one is, the question is, what do we think the most played deck will be at the Pro Tour? I think it's going to be Burn. The meta is still evolving. People are still not knowing what to play. Burn was a very good choice last time at the Pro Tour when there was a mix-up, and it did fairly well. I think it's going to be very good against, like, that it can sideboard now with better cards for, like, Infect and Affinity to make those matchups even better, because they'll have access to, like, more Searing Blazes and Searing Bloods, where I think those will be able to rise to the top against, like, the other aggro decks, because they'll be able to play a much more amount of interaction and control the board better than their other brethren of the Affinity Infect Trifecta.
Is, in fact, a bad matchup for Burn?
Not really, because, like, you play so many bolts and stuff, but, like, sometimes when you have, like, Lava Spike, like, it's a bad matchup.
Yeah.
But, like, if you have any amount of interaction, like, it's hard to beat, like, you know, like, the 17-bolt deck. But when you get more access to, like, Searing Bloods and stuff, you have a lot better game.
It seems like whenever your Searing Blazes are live, you've got a good matchup.
Right.
You're definitely live in a deck that is running Noble Hierarchs and bunch of 1/1 creatures.
Yeah, most of them are 1/1, so even like if you don't get the landfall in, you still get like the effect of like killing your dude and still like deal 1 damage to you.
You know, if you look over to the last Star City, the classic was won by Infect, but the third place deck is a mono red burn deck. It is a main deck mono red. It has it has two stomping grounds in it, and then it's like just a ton of fetch lands that can grab it. And that's only for sideboard Destructive Revelry. But he doesn't have the Boros Charm. In fact, he's got, let's see, what he's got instead? Shard Volley. Four Shard Volley instead.
Jeez, all
right. He's got three main deck Grim Lavamancer, which is insanely good right now. So,
yeah.
I could see it. I mean, if, you know, he's running Molten Rain in the sideboard. Is Tron a problem for Burn, or can you just, it seems like you can race it.
It can be a problem. Like, it is usually a good matchup because, like, they can't kill your stuff. But, like, sometimes, like, if you're on the draw and you mull the, like, six and they get the turn three Worm Coil.
Yeah.
And you don't have, like, anything, like, it can be. But, like, most of the times it's not too bad because, like, your top decks are a lot more alive than theirs because, like, you're just like, all right, they're at six and I just need, like, two top decks to win.
Yeah.
So, usually it's a pretty good matchup. But I think now that Tron has a lot more sideboard slots, I think it will be tougher for them because, like, Tron doesn't have to worry about Twins, so its sideboard can now have, like...
Thragtusk?
Yeah, like, three Thragtusks now instead of, like, one sometimes.
All right.
So
cool. Seems good. I mean, yeah, if Tron is predicted to be, you know, one of the biggest decks in this new standard, and then we expect to see a lot of aggro, I don't see why Burn can't be a contender.
Yep.
I'm sure a lot of the pros will be on that. Full disclosure, that's my most played deck pick as well, so
I'll put that
out there right now.
If you guys are right, then I'm stupid.
What do you got, Daryl?
I got Affinity as, I think, the most played deck. I think the tiny robot men will be aggressive, like, are the most aggressively played deck. Like, so it's, because it's really awkward to me that this is one of the better decks, but, like, it can just put one of, like, so there are, like, 12 cards you actually care about in Affinity, which are Clarineal Plating, Arcbound Ravager, and then, like, whatever other two-drop they are willing to play that powers up their guys. It's like some decks play Steel Overseer. Mm-hmm. And some of them play Master of Ethereum. So those are, like, the other two things that matter. So there's, like, 12 cards that are actually matter, and then, like, 48 ham sandwiches. The rest of them are just terrible. So, like, to me, how a deck with, like, 12 real cards can win a Pro Tour makes no sense to me. But sometimes it just has, like, turn one, put my entire hand into play, turn two, draw an ex-champion and play it, and then, like, equip my plating to something and attack you for 11 or something, and you just die. And so I think that, like, ex-champion will be a serious problem. Even though there are Kolaghan's Commands running around, I feel like the Jund decks that prey on Twin, that the Kolaghan's Command decks, are going to go into recession. Because Twin, which was a reasonable matchup for them, is no longer there to prey on. And even though they had a kind of tough matchup against Bloom, and that's not there anymore, Tron Jund is like a 50-50 matchup, and you don't really want to try and coin flip all day.
Right.
And I can see people trying to bring back such hits as Ad Nauseam, Storm, etc. So, like, I don't think Jund is a great deck to be on. Like, people who are good with creatures and like to play those grinding games will play it, and I don't think they're wrong. But, like, because that's what they're good with. But I think that Affinity will be the most representative deck in bringing the tiny little robot men.
The only reason I didn't pick Affinity, actually, I'm just going to change my number two answer to Affinity, is because I think Affinity, while is, I think it's much more difficult to, like, play. I think pros, like, only been, like, this ban happened, what, like 2 weeks ago. And so they only had, like, a month to get ready. I don't think they want to have to play Affinity for like 14 rounds. And I'm not saying Affinity is impossible to play, but it has so many micro decisions on it, like, where I don't feel comfortable, even if I knew it was the best deck by, like, let's say, like, 2 or 3 percentages points, I don't know if I'd feel comfortable playing it, like, knowing that I only had a few weeks to prep playing Affinity. Whereas Burn's not as easy as people say it is, but it's, like, a lot easier to pilot than I think Affinity is, because there's so many different, like, micro decisions you do with Affinity, with, like, your man lands, your Mox Opals, all your Springleaf Drums and everything. Whereas Burn is a little bit more straightforward. So I think, given the opportunity to, like, test and play for, you know, a lot longer time, I think Affinity would be the higher, the better turnout. But I think with only so few of a time to get ready for this, I think Burn is a lot easier to pilot for that.
Sure. I'm gonna throw this out here. Number two, for the, since Nick didn't cover it, is the most successful deck based on win percentage.
Yes. So I changed my answer. It was Burn, but I'm actually going to change it to Affinity, because I think the people who are playing Affinity are going to be the people who play the hell out of Affinity or took the time to play the hell out of it for the past 3 weeks and like decided to get good with that deck. So I think Affinity would be the one of the top performers because the people playing it are going to be the guys who are going to be the gurus of it.
All right. Mine is Infect, and it is a little bit of a – I'm going to foreshadow my number 7, which is the best showing from Oath of the Gatewatch, spoiler alert. I think that Infect has a good shot with fewer Snap Bolt decks in the format, and I predict some slip through space to be splashed in there. That card seems to be made for Infect. Has that been tried?
So it's been tried, and I talked about it with my group of friends. I don't think it's better than the Distortion Strike that they have available to them now. Mm-hmm. So they lose a +1/+0, and they lose it to rebound it again for the cost of drawing a card. I don't think is really worth it.
But that card could be a groundswell. You know, that card could be 4 more points of Infect damage. You know?
Or it could be a forest.
Right, it could be a forest as well.
It could be a forest, that's true. But to make your draw better for the next turn, if you are going to draw a forest, makes your next turn just as effective as, you know, just having a 1/1 that's going to attack when you draw a forest.
Rebound,
you know.
But with the Distortion Strike, though, you for sure, well, not for sure, but you have access to a +2 pump. So, like, that draw card has to that's be true. Better than an average of +2 pump.
Right, that's fair.
So I don't think it's going to be that average draw is going to be better than the +2 pump most of the time.
No, I don't play Infect. I haven't ever even tried it. But I know that there's some theories on like how many cantrips you run allow you to play, you know, fewer lands in your deck. I don't know that Infect can even like spare any lands because it's got like the man lands and things in it already, but that's something to consider too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the value of a card is extremely high. You know, in modern, just a 1-mana cantrip obviously is really good because our choices are so poor for those. Like we've already been banned from using Ponder and Preordain, and so we settle for something like Serum Visions. I think there are going to be a lot of decks where Slip Through Space might be a fine choice. So there it is. Infect.
Do you think that's a main deck card, or do you think that's a sideboard card?
Well, I can see like one or two in the main deck. That's all.
Okay. Because I think it's like against like decks that aren't even playing creatures, it's a dead card. Whereas like Distortion Strike is at least a +1 pump against like decks that aren't even playing creatures. That's but I guess fair. This is draw card, so like I don't know.
Yeah, it does get you another card. Did Danny right. Jessup run? Yeah, he did. He had 2 in his main deck, and he won the SCG Classic with that. And so his deck is pretty stock. It's kind of cool. He's got a Viridian Corruptor main deck.
He's on
the Wild Defiance, in fact. So he's got 1 Wild Defiance in the main and 1 in the side, but that makes Slip Through Space quite a bit better, too. Wild Defiance is the enchantment that whenever a creature becomes a target of an instant or sorcery, it gets +3/+3. So any sorts of cantrips like that are going to be all the more value for you.
Yeah.
All right, Daryl. What you got?
I'm gonna go off the rails. I'm Captain Off the Rails here. Like everything I've seen from you guys is pretty reasonable. I'm just not even close. I'm with Kiki Cord.
Okay. Cool. That's the most successful deck.
Most successful deck. I feel like that. Like there will be these straightforward aggro decks, but like I feel like that we lost one of the bigger contenders for combo deck in the format. Mm-hmm. In Splinter Twin, and the other one in Bloom. And so I feel like there's only one big mana strategy. Well, there's 2 if you count Eldrazi, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I feel like that deck, those were its big menaces. Like, between things like Voice of Resurgence and Kitchen Finks and, you know, Wall of Omens and Wall of Roots and all these defensive creatures that... You know, you curve out into things like Eternal Witness and Restoration Angel. I feel like you have enough creatures and, like, tools in your deck with Court of Calling and Corsair Crucifix to fight these aggro decks. And I think between Eternal Witness and Rebel Arc and Kiki Jiki and Restoration Angel, you have enough of the tools to fight the grindy decks. And then you do have this combo flourish if you need to hit the abort button on a game and just get out. So I feel like based on all that, and it kind of goes with the affinity concept, that there are a lot of like decisions of how you build your deck and what one-ups you include and what's in your sideboard. And, you know, do you play two Stony Silence or do you play a Stony Silence and a Kiki Jiki? You know, I think that all of these very small touches that you can do with a Kiki Core deck, you know, are you splashing a color? If you're splashing black, are you going to splash for, you know, just the one Singleton or Zoth Pontiff? Or are you splashing for, like, Sing Collector or Seed Rhino or, like, all these micro deck-building decisions will pay off during the day of, you know, who can best predict the meta and put all the creature pieces in play for the, for to be able to win games. No collecting companies in this deck, just straight up, like, the Kiki Jiki Cord deck.
Yeah, it's like a surgical, like, this is what I need right now. Fallen Mater Mage, blow up your Tron piece.
Yeah, one Fallen Mater Mage or two. Yeah. Kitchen Finks, Lone Missionary, you know, do I have life gain? You know, am I playing an Acidic Slime? Am I playing a, you know, all these small touches. Like, what cards can really go into this deck? You know, I think that will, based on that, the people who are building this deck had to have a lot of reps in with the deck. Because you have to know what feels right as far as the correct numbers. And I feel like it's very, very practice intensive. Like, sure, you can memorize, oh, I cord for Restoration Angel, blink my turn away, skip back my cord, next turn cord for Kiki G. Like, you can memorize that. That's duh. Okay. But the nuances of what exact cards you're putting in your deck, what's the appropriate card for an appropriate scenario, I think that to be able to have those nuances under control, you have to have so much practice with your deck that you're not flying into this Pro Tour playing Kiki Horde without having a lot of experience. And I think that'll pay off for the people that are playing it.
I think that's a really good pick, Daryl, though it may be kind of from left field. It's you know, Hoogland had his two back-to-back top eights.
That's a perfect example, I would say, of skill and knowing this deck.
And it's not like it's just randomly happened to him because he has been, you know, tweaking this deck for months and months. I mean, his series goes back almost a year on this deck, and it's changed quite a bit. But it seems like once Pia and Karan became part of the mix, it's like it takes it to a whole new level. But now two other people have played this to, like, top eight and near top eight success last weekend. There was one in ninth place just outside of the top eight. And then I think there's another one even further down in that classic from last weekend.
But yeah, I think this deck is primed to be the breakout deck.
Go ahead.
It's been picking up a lot of steam. Like, the prices for, like, all the pieces on it on TCG have been, like, going up quite a lot. I think, like, Voice Resurgence is, like, close to $50 now.
Yeah.
So I think, like, people thought, like, this was a good gap to fill if you want to play, like, yeah, it's $43 on TCG right now. But it's a good place to be if you, like, still want to play combo and, like, not play, like, Splinter Twin Exarch, but, like, play Resto Kiki. Mm-hmm. So it's a good, like Daryl said, a board button to win, like, games you need just, like, win because you're playing against, like, Tron or something.
Yeah, I think I have every piece of this deck. I'm going to put this one together. It looks fun. Yep, so I could see, like, you know, four or five people showing up with this deck and all of them playing it well versus, like, you know, tons of people, like, on Affinity and some of them don't make day two, you know, so.
Right,
yeah.
Anyways, let's go on. Number three, biggest price spike.
Price spikes, all right.
All right, mine was, until I looked at the prices today, Passing Flames, which apparently spiked, like, yesterday. But then
what was it yesterday?
It was, like, $4, now it's, like, $13.
Oh, yeah, it's historically been, like, under $3 for the longest
time. Hey, you win! You nailed it!
Yeah.
300% price spike because of the Pro Tour, you nailed it.
All right, go me. Yeah, let's see, December 23rd, it was $4.50. And today it is $21.40 on the map. Nope, $13.70.
You get it for $10 on TCG. Yep. Yeah.
But I thought that was going to be good because it also fills a role of like I think there's going to be a lot of combo decks that can run around in the format. Like, as long as they can, like, live to turn four. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no reason, like, because a lot of time when you were playing like Passing Flames or Ad Nauseam, everybody would say, "Well, why aren't you just playing Twin?" So there's no longer that argument anymore. So, like, if you want to play Passing Flames or Eggs or Ad Nauseam, you can now do it without, like, getting, like, playing the quote-unquote worst of the combo decks.
Yeah.
So I think those are...
Yeah, the rest of the combo decks are equally bad.
Right. Yeah, they're all bad, but, like, they're still, like, a combo deck. So, like, you can, like, be good against, like, Tron and stuff who want to just, like, set up board and just cream them. So that was on my top of the list. But then also, Court of Calling didn't really go up in price when all the rest of the cards for Daryl's go-to deck went up. Court of Calling is like sitting at like $6 or $7 when like everything else has gone up. Like Wall of Omens is now like $7. I said Voice was like $43. Pia and Kira, Nalara are like up to like $7. So I think that card should be going up. That card was $30 before the reprints. Because I remember I traded my Tundra for a playset of them, and boy was I sad when they like printed it right after. And I'm like, oh boy.
Yeah, it's so, not. It's, it can't possibly stay as cheap as it is right now.
Right,
like it's played in Modern.
Correct.
And the reprint was far enough away now at this point where, you know, that set's not being open anymore.
Right, it's not being open. It's probably can creep up more and more. Just got out of Standard, so like people are just got done dumping them. So I think it can only go up from here.
Daryl, you were saying something.
You're fine.
Mine is, and this is also my breakout card, or one of my breakout cards, but
combos.
This is a random one here. It's Rally the Ancestors.
Reason
being that, I think the card has a lot of potential in a format full of cheap creature combos, such as, like, Kitchen Finks combo. But there are plenty of people playing this in Standard right now, and so how could we not be thinking about brewing with it in Modern? I could see Sam Black coming out of in Aristocrats. there it was.
We reached our quota. You squeezed it in there.
I did. Coming out with an Aristocrats build based around Rally the Ancestors in Modern.
I quit. I don't know why I'm on this podcast. Oh my god, you guys are killing me.
What do you guys think?
So let's build this deck. So you got to be playing like what, like
Vicar Seer? No.
Does it work? Does that even work with that combo?
Vicar Seer?
No. Rally the Ancestors with Vicar Seer, Kitchen Finks, Malira.
Yeah.
Well, no. What I was missing.
It would work.
Yeah, as long as you're like missing like one or two in your graveyard already, and then you play it, and then you have a combo on board.
I mean, you could just play like literal like 8 Blood Artists. You could play Blood Artist and Zulaport Cutthroat, Viscerous Seer, Geralt's Messenger.
I mean, there have got to be better ways to load up your graveyard in Modern than there are in Standard.
Yeah,
right.
And in fact, like the only way in Standard really is Jace. You know, in this deck, there's not even any good like dredge or, you know, self mill stuff that people are running to make it worthwhile. But
yeah, Grave Troll.
There's something. Yeah, Grave Troll. I've seen people
Grave Troll Faith Fluting
do that sort of thing. They dredge in a bunch of Garry's. Gray Merchants. They dredge
Gray Merchant of Espadel.
And so if you can play 3 Gray Merchants at the same time with a rally, that's 18 damage, right?
Yes.
6 times 3. So without any other black pip on the field.
Gary's only 2, isn't he?
He's 2, but they count
each other. Yeah, 2, 4, 6, and then they trigger.
Oh, yeah. Six. Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Also worth noting, like, Rally for 3 lets you Fulminator Mage your opponent into the ground.
Oh, God, it's an instant, too.
It is.
Yeah, on your upkeep, I would like to Rally the Ancestors and Fulminator Mage you into the ground.
Yeah.
Thanks for playing.
So there's got to be something. I feel like this is untapped potential for Modern.
All right. I'll buy.
Tour, but keep your eyes open.
All right.
All right, Joe, what do you got?
I'm going to go back to the deck I talked about earlier today. I got Goblin Dark Dwellers as the hero. Yeah.
Okay.
So this card, there's the obvious build around synergy of building it around, you know, Boom Bust and trying to blow up all your opponent's lands. Sure. I'll buy it. That's fine. But you just have to look at Modern. Modern is a format of 3 CMC spells. Like 3 and less.
Right.
So like, there's a bunch of different builds you can do with it. You can build it in a Jeskai build and just play like, that is your curve topper with like all of the different burn spells. And like, you can play, I have it in a Mardu shell with, Crackling Doom and Kolaghan's Command. Knight's Whisper and Read the Bones and Hero's Downfall. Out of the sideboard, you get Molten Rain and Timely Reinforcements. And then I also paired it up with Kiki Jiki. So Kiki Jiki plus Goblin Dark Dwellers just is like, what's in my graveyard? You're going to face down two of these a turn, pretty much, for the rest of the game. And it has great synergy with Restoration Angel as far as gain free spells. Because a lot of times the body of a 4-4 menace is... What would you actually pay for literally just a 4-4 menace?
Four.
You pay four for that?
Would like actually like play it, or like would it be like actually printed?
What is it costed? What do you think a 4-4 menace is costed at?
I'd say three. That's three? Like playable.
I think that's pushed. Because you look at uncountable 4-4 with abilities, and you have Luxon Spider.
Yeah, so I think like menace, like Luxon Spider has two abilities of uncountable and can't be discarded, and I think change that for menace, and that sounds fine.
Okay. So you're getting at most 6 mana out of this card. If you look at a 4-4 mana spell, so a 3-3 mana spell.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I think, but like, between all the targets we have, like, just in the deck I built, there's Path to Exile, Inquisition, and Thoughtseize, Lightning Bolt, Lightning Helix, Crackling Doom, Kolaghan's Command, Anger of the Gods, Read the Bones, Night's Whisper, Molten Rain, Timely Reinforcement, Celestial Purge.
You play a main deck Celestial Purge?
No, the Celestial Purge is in the sideboard, as is the Molten Rain and the Timely.
Okay.
But, like, those are all, like, the 3 mana instants I figured out, and Anger of the Gods. So if you can build, like, a Mardu build where you play Soulfire Grandmaster, and you have, you know, 15 or 16 burn spells. So if the Soulfire lives for a turn, you untap, you bolt a thing, you helix a thing, you gain 9 life, you cast Anger of the Gods and gain, like, 30 against Infect. Like, so, like, that's a way you can go. You can play a big version with PM Kirin or Restoration Angel, like... There's a lot of spells that Dark Dwellers can target, and I think if you create a deck that makes the game go long enough, you'll get so much value out of Dark Dwellers by playing that game that the card is a very, very build-aroundable card. I don't think you're going to see a lot of Rest in Pieces coming out in this Pro Tour, so I think that the effect is also protected.
By the way, since we are on the topic of price spike, we should say that Dark Dwellers is now about $3. And yeah. Rally, I didn't mention either, is under $1. It's like 98 cents. So there's a lot of upward...
upward trend for both of those.
Yeah. Cool. So then number 4 is the breakout card, which might be related to price spike and might not. Nick, what do you got?
So mine was still Pass in Flames. I still think it's going to be Pass in Flames, because I think there's going to be some amount of people who are playing, you know, the Jund, Blue-White-Red Control, Tron, and Eldrazi decks where Pass in Flame dot deck can destroy. Maybe not with Thought Nuts here for Eldrazi. But I think it has a lot of good matchups where, like, if you want to, like, control the board, and not the hand or the stack, Pass in Flames dot deck is a very good deck to be on. And you can, like, manipulate your sideboard to beat aggro decks by just, like, having a crap ton of, like, young pyromancers and bolts if you want to, like, gum up the board and such. So I think that card, I think pros like blue decks in general, too. So this is, like, another good alternative to, like, control the board a little bit and be able to combo off. Granted, the combo's not nearly as good or the board control's not nearly as good, but it's still a way to play a combo deck that has some... Plan B options.
Right on. I put Rally in mind, but also since breakout card doesn't necessarily mean a price spike, I put Gideon in there. Gideon's already about 20 some bucks, and I don't see him like going that much higher. But I think I could see it. And obviously, it's like getting, you know, tried out in like a white black tokens deck. But the value of an emblem in Modern is insane when you have a bunch of 1/1 creatures that you're trying to save from, like, a Pyroclasm or something. You know, you can't remove an emblem in any circumstance. There's no way to interact with an emblem at this point in the game. So, to follow up, like, a turn
Karn-Alt.
3 Lingering Souls, Karn-Alt, yeah, there you go, start the game over. That's the one way. Yep. Which is relevant, I suppose. But to follow up a turn 3 Lingering Souls with a Gideon seems great, but not to mention the card is just pure value, everything it does. There's no downside to it.
Right, and swinging for 5 is, like, huge, because, like, sometimes they'll just have, like, a Goyf in play, and you're just like, well, you have, like, the soldiers or something, so, like, being able to just have, like, a 5-5 beater to get through a Goyf is pretty huge.
Right. Not to mention white deck, you know, you could be, like, on an Esper deck that's got, like, Supreme Verdicts. A 5-5 beats any of the man lands. That, you know, could, you know, pop up and block it. And so in that case, there's not much that's going to get in the way.
I mean, it's also worth noting that this card is indestructible.
Yeah, yeah, indestructible.
So, oh, it's, so like, it doesn't matter what's going to block it.
That's like, true.
Literally doesn't matter. You want a Supreme Verdict you're getting? Sure.
Well, it matters in that you're going to kill the creature that's blocking it, though. That's what I'm saying. Like, if you just want to throw something in the way of it, then to get rid of a man land is pretty intense because you're time walking them and they're losing land from it.
Yes.
And it's a plus. It's a plus on the card to do that. You know, it's only making it harder to deal with. So that seems nuts. And why not in, like, a Jeskai control deck?
Completely reasonable.
This is a great finisher for a Jeskai control deck. It plays tokens to block and defend and, you know, help you get to the game.
I also think that if you just, like, the pure synergy with Restoration Angel is absurd. So you make your Gideon a 5/5, you attack them, they block or whatever. End of combat, you play Restoration Angel, you blink your Gideon, and then you activate it and make a Night Token.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
That is great.
So, I mean, you're getting a 5 attack for 5 and a 2/2 out of it. Threatening 10 damage next turn. So, I mean, in most modern mana bases, that's threatening lethal next turn.
Yeah, that's not...
Seems all right.
So, there's mine. Daryl, what you got?
My breakout card is in no way, shape, or form even realistically playable with my price tag. It's not even close. Like, if you could put both of these cards in the same deck, I would be impressed. All
right.
And that's Cryptic Command.
Oh, yeah.
So... Yeah, you're not ever casting Cryptic Command with Dwellers, no. And the triple blue, nearly impossible. But, like, I feel like the rise of Splinter Twin, and it's, like, forcing you to play these super, super sleek answers that Splinter Twin now easily answers with Dispels and Remands. Mm-hmm. Like, that was sort of the premier blue deck. And because everyone was fighting the arms race of, like, how do I beat Twin by killing their guy and dispelling their dispel and dispelling their second dispel? People were packing a ton of dispels and a bunch of remands, and like those were all premium cards. And so now that you're seeing these decks that you need hard counters for start to come up, and you know, your Tron decks, you know, being able to attack creatures down with Cryptic Command against Affinity, countering burn spells when you can like delay the game with your other interaction, like, I feel like Cryptic Command is poised to make a resurgence in Modern from seeing zero play to probably being the cornerstone of some of these Jeskai control decks. That can.
I like that a lot, actually, yeah. That makes a lot more sense because it was seeing so little play because, like, you could never play it. Like, it was a 4-up for, like, a while when Pod was, like, Tier 1 and the bad dog to be killing because they don't have a way to interact with it. But now that, like, Twin was, like, the best thing ever, like... Getting it dispelled was, like, the literally worst thing ever.
Let me tell you how bad it feels. It feels awful. So, like, the time that you have to use, like, Cryptic Command their spell and they dispel it, and you have to go in and remand your Cryptic Command so you don't lose it, you draw a card, and then you're like, well, I still have to figure out how to deal with the spell that they have on the stack. It's just, like, a disaster.
Right. Or, like, they're just like, here's my Deceiver, or here's my Splinter Twin. You're like, no. And they're like, I gotcha. And, like, even if you have a counter to, like, the Dispel, like, it was just such a cheap answer to a 4-mana counter. Like,
yeah.
It's, yeah. So I think that actually is a very good point. Like, now that Dispel's, like, going to see a lot less play, that's a very strong card, especially if you can do, like, Snapcast it into it. Because, like, that card, like, snapping into it is a non-dispelled Cryptic Command is, like, the best feeling ever.
Yeah, Snapcasting Cryptic Command. So, like, I think 99% of players who play Cryptic Command that aren't professionals don't play Cryptic Command correctly. And that's, like, you're countering their spell, probably, and then you, like, draw a card, right? That's, like, the most often the mode you use on Cryptic Command. When you cast Snapcaster Mage and cast Cryptic Command, you should always just bounce your Snapcaster Mage.
Depending on how many Cryptics you have left in the yard, yes.
No, I mean, you just, like, your Cryptic Command deck is going to be a deck with a bunch of spells. So having the flexibility of, like, that thing is not, and, like, is a random card from my deck going to be better than Snapcaster Mage?
Probably not.
If you want to attack with the Snapcaster Mage, not he does that.
Yes. Yes, if you want to attack, yes, you should leave it in play. But, like, 90% of the time, a random card from your deck is not better than Snapcaster Mage.
Yeah.
True that.
All right, Nick, so, I hope you don't mind. I'm going to jump in front of you here because I think my breakout deck is going to be a direct relationship to Daryl's point here.
Okay.
All right, so I'm picking Delver. I'm picking specifically blue-red Delver because of all of these decks assuming that Snap Bolt is not going to be a thing and Dispel is not going to be a thing. But blue-red Delver is going to next level all of them, play Spell Pierces for your Cryptic Commands, play Spell Snare for your Tarmogoyfs and other two-drop aggressive creatures. It's going to have Snap Bolt, and it's going to race all of the combo decks while it's bolting the shit out of the Wild Mikados and things in the Zoo decks.
Boom. I can combine that. Okay. A local that I play against, who's pretty good at grinding Modern, is playing U-Red Delver with the Storm Chaser Mage, and he's playing three Blood Moons main because his meta was like all Tron and all Eldrazi, so like that deck just like stomps him hard.
By the way, Storm Chaser Mage is miserably bad. Don't play it in blue.
I don't think it's going to be bad. I think it's got potential.
It's way worse than Young Pyromancer.
I think it's a totally different deck that it belongs in. I don't see a Storm Chaser Mage Delver deck being the breakout deck as much as I see maybe a Young Pyromancer version of the deck would be more likely, because you have to play a lot of the main phase removal pieces and things in that sort of deck.
I think the two decks will kind of fall into the same camp.
But you can run Grim Lavamancer in here, though, and I don't see why you wouldn't do that. That seems great.
Yeah.
Grim Lavamancer. Yeah, I think I like Grixis with Tassiger.
Ooh. Alright. But yeah, I think the Storm Chaser Mage decks will kind of fall into Delver, because like when you're already trying to play a bunch of spells to make your Prowess guys good, like Delver is just a natural fit. So I think those two decks will sort of mesh together.
I wonder if there's
as an archetype.
I think there's going to be a Prowess, just Prowess, no Delver deck. Because like a big problem with like the Prowess deck that like Chapin made like a month or two ago was it played four of the Mishra's Bauble, and you don't want to play those when you're playing Delver. So I think if you have like Goblin Swiss Guy, Spear, Swiss Spear, Storm Chaser, and Abbott. Yeah, that seems like it could be all right.
All right, I can buy that.
So. Yeah, I don't think Storm Chaser is great, but I don't think it's a bad card in Modern. I think it just needs to find a home where like you want to be spamming spells, which I guess is like what you want to do with Young Pyromancer, but like it's much more aggressive than Pyromancer.
Right, so more like a burn type deck than like a reactive counterspell type of deck.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, I can see that.
Yep.
Kiln Fiend deck.
No, Jesus.
Slip Through Space belongs in there too, by the way.
Oh, Jesus.
All right, anyways, go on. What do you got, Nick? Sorry for skipping you.
I'm still on the Storm High. I saw a Storm Waste Knot deck.
Sweet.
That apparently is doing well on the interwebs that I'm reading, but I haven't seen a list that I really like because I don't really play Storm, so I'm not going to be like, I like this list, but... Waste Knot's gone up a few bucks recently, so I still think Storm will be a breakout in the format because like it's literally seeing like zero play right now. So I think if anything, it'll see a good bump in the meta.
Okay.
Yeah, it allows you to play Dark Deal and Reforge the Soul, and those are great with Waste Knot and Storm.
Correct.
So cool.
Okay. So, was Breakout deck? Yeah, okay. I couldn't remember what category. I have Eldrazi Aggro.
Okay.
And, I'm not 100% sure what form that's going to take. I'm not 100% sure if it'll be, like, black-white, black-red, if it'll play, like, a bunch of the processors or just Wasteland Strangler. But I feel like the 2-mana Eldrazi 2-1...
Mimic?
Yeah, Eldrazi Mimic, plus Thought Knot Seer, plus Reality Smasher is, I think that's too strong of an aggressive core. Like, these are just aggressively costed creatures that you can just cast.
Yeah.
Very easily with Eldrazi Temple and Ivy. You can also play Eldrazi Displacer as a protection spell. If you want to, like, try and protect your Thought Knot Seers and your Reality Smashers. So, like, your opponent targets your Reality Smasher, they discard a card, and then I don't know what the timing on the discarding a card for Reality Smasher is. If, they have to discard a card as part of the cost or on resolution.
It's countered unless you discard a card, so.
So does the spell have to attempt to resolve? So I assume it works like a trigger, and then it's trigger, pay the cost?
No, I think whenever, Yeah.
Whenever Reality Smasher becomes the target of a spell an opponent controls.
Okay, so trigger play the cost. All right.
Correct.
Because then you can they try and kill your Reality Smasher, and you just have the onboard trick of like blink my Reality Smasher, so they can never actually try and kill Reality Smasher. Otherwise, they're just like hemorrhaging cards for no reason.
So now they should have to face. Be a better...
Well, I mean, like even the onboard trick of Eldrazi is placed here just being a 3/2 that you can play on turn two.
Yeah, but that's a green and blue card, right?
No,
Splicer is the white one.
Oh, that's the white one. I was thinking of the flash target creature gets hexproof. Yeah, it's a devoid card with a white cost is what it is.
Oh, it has a colorless activation.
Oh, yeah,
I'm stupid. I thought it was straight up colorless, and I was like, isn't this card just insane? Like, how do we not play it?
Yeah. Well, you want Path anyway, right? You want Path to Exile. You want...
I mean, Path not bad. But I don't even think you have to go as high as, you know, Ugin... Oblivion Sower.
No, you don't. Always, for sure.
Do you like Matter Shaper on that list? Because it's playing some 3-drops. Like, it's playing a good amount, like the Mimic and the Displacer
in
itself. And it's, like, just a good... It's an alright creature with the
3-2. Yeah, it's a body. It's a body that replaces itself, yeah.
Right.
And it's when it leaves play, so if you get to, the grindy matchups, you can blink it and, blink your Reshaper, trigger it, blink your Reshaper, trigger it. I think that there's just enough good, reasonably costed bodies for that deck to play.
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious that there's a deck there somewhere. I'm sure someone will try it.
Reshaper is only dies, not blinks or anything.
Oh, okay, never mind. Less excited.
Yeah, it's still good though. It's still a 3/2 that replaces itself.
Turn one, Eldrazi Mimic, or if you just play Iabugan, those guys are free. Turn 2, Matter Reshaper, make my Eldrazi Mimic a 3/2, 3U. You know, turn 3, Thought Not Seer, or Reality Smasher if you get multiple 2 mana lands. And you're talking somewhere in the range of 7 to 13 damage on turn 3.
Man, yeah. I think that card's a trap. Matter Reshaper's no good in Modern.
I mean, I think it's fine in this mono colorless deck. It's just a 3/2 that is a decent attack.
There's better stuff you can be doing with that in mono mana. We already have Dusk Urchins in Modern. You know what that card is?
Nobody knows what that card is.
It is functionally the same thing 90% of the time. Dusk Urchins. It costs black and 2 colorless. It's a 4/3. When it attacks or blocks, you put a -1/-1 counter on it. And when it's put into a graveyard, draw a card for each -1/-1 counter on it. So it attacks as a 3/2, it dies, and you draw a card. Because in this deck, your chances of getting a 3 cost or less permanent are quite low. So it's only going to attack once. It gets blocked and dies every time. Because unless you've got a Noble Hierarch or a Birds of Paradise on the other side of the table, everything's got 2 power in Modern.
Yeah, but this puts lands into play, though. Putting a land into play is not nothing. That's a land true. On turn 4 is not nothing when you're playing 8 drops.
Yeah, that's fair.
Anyways. Or the worst mode of him is drawing a card. It's at worst, he's drawing a card, and the best part is, putting another one of him in play.
Or even putting in Eldrazi Mimic to just follow up with Reality Smasher and tending them.
Right. I guess the land is relevant if you want to be ramping anyway into 5-drop or something. So that's
cool. Yeah, I mean, but I think there's something here for a more aggressive version, not necessarily the control version, the mono black that you've seen that's trying to curve the Ulamog and get big mana. Yeah, I think there's something for an aggressive version that's trying to be in your face and on the ground.
Sure.
Yeah, I can see that.
All right. That's the end of our breakout deck. So we got to go on to the
You probably
want to
play, the black-red, the Forerunner of Slaughter, right? The guy that gives target colorless creature gains haste on a turn.
But doesn't he cost both colors?
He does cost both colors, which is...
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah.
If he didn't cost both colors, he'd be playable.
Yeah, that's really intense. There is the black Savannah Lions, though.
Oh, yeah, that's right, the new one.
Reaver Drone.
Yeah, I mean, whatever aggressive stance you'd like to take is the direction to go with it.
All right, anyways, let's leave this. Going on to the next one. Sure. That was our breakout deck, so we are on the biggest disappointment, and that could be a deck, a person, a thing, an object.
I think we all went with... I went with a card, but I think everyone else went with decks.
All right, yeah. Nick, what you got?
I think Tron is going to be... the sad pony in the show. I don't know how many people are actually going to be playing it because Tron was hyped to be the deck of the century once Twin left, and it hasn't shown up very much at all. I still think that's going to be the case for this Pro Tour. It hasn't shown up in like any of the Star Cities I've seen. Like the top 16 was all aggro. I still don't think Tron's going to be very good on the Pro Tour. So I don't think there's going to be much of Tron, even though like it was supposed to be like the worst thing ever created. Why, Wizards? Why did you ever do this? So I think it's going to be...
It still is the worst thing ever created, but all that aside.
Correct. It is quite shitty because like it has like an 80-20 matchup for everything. Like there's not a whole lot of 50-50s in that matchup anymore.
Right, right.
Maybe like Affinity might be 50-50.
No, that deck is not a deck of 80-20 matchups. Or 50-50 matchups, sorry.
Correct. It's not made to have 50-50 matchups, which is I like having 60-40 matchups in like every deck I play, but like that's not Tron. So
That's my pick too, but I'm going to expand it to say any big mana deck that is dependent on a really specific mana base, because it's easy to gun for both Eldrazi control and Tron with the same pieces, be it Blood Moon or Molten Rain or Fulminator Rage or Crumble to Dust or something, and everyone's going to do that. In fact, like we already mentioned, that Mono Red Burn deck is running 4 Molten Rain in the sideboard. Doesn't seem like something that the deck needs to do, but because it expects to see a lot of those decks, it's ready to take them down. But 80-20 matchups is the story of Eldrazi control specifically. And I'm not talking about the aggro deck we just kind of hypothesized about a second ago, but the ones that are playing like the Ugins in the
Oblivion Sword,
the Blight Herders and stuff. Like, there are a lot of pieces that need to fall into place for that to like actually function the way it's supposed to.
Yeah.
And so when it happens, it's really sad to get beat by it because it's just totally unbeatable. But when it doesn't happen, it's like the game is just dumb. It's like you just tear it up, and it's doing things like, I'm going to play a turn 5 Blight Herder with no processing ability. I just got a 4/5 on the table. And your Tarmogoyf laughs. So, there's that. Daryl.
Speaking of Tarmogoyf.
Yeah.
He is my late disappointment.
Oh, good.
He needs
to be taken down a notch.
I just listen to you talk, and I just... So Tarmogoyf is the only way you can put a clock on with the green decks against Burn. Mm-hmm. But, like, Burn is, like, if you want to feed Burn, like, Jund decks all day, Burn's like, okay, Jund, bolt, you're dead.
Yeah.
Like, Tarmogoyf not great against Tron. Like, you know, they put it into play. Like, that's the only way the Jund decks are ever beating Tron, is, like, multiple Tarmogoyfs backed up with Disruption and Land Hate. So, like, Tarmogoyf is always at the pivot point of any, like, reasonably grindy Tarmogoyf deck's strategy at winning the game against other decks. And so, like, but I think when Tarmogoyf's friends show up to the party and not Tarmogoyf himself, that deck is terrible against, like, the such super linear, hyper-fast decks in Modern, whether they be combos, whether they be aggro decks. And so, like, Tarmogoyf is, like, the key piece of all those grindy decks. But I think because it won't show up every game in multiple numbers, the Dex Tarmogoyf is in will be a gigantic
disappointment. Yeah. Fair. Hopefully it'll lose some value. It'll go down to like $20, $30, and then
never.
Other green players can play Modern.
Not possible.
So one day after Modern Masters 2018 comes out,
no, not even.
We'll hit the $70 mark, and it'll be a big land. Landmark.
It's like at the $100 mark now, isn't it?
It's $100 mark still.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right. The last category is the best showing from Oath of the Gatewatch. Nick?
I got two. Thought Not Seer and Storm Chaser Mage. I am kind of against when we're talking about the biggest disappointments. I think because the new Eldrazi decks will have access to Thought Not Seer and Reality Smasher, I think they'll do a little bit better than Tron when, like, face against hate, because, like, they're not playing, like, all 7 and 8 drops now. Like, they have, like, 4 and 5 drops. So, like, yeah, if you blow up a land, like, it sucks, but I have, like, 4 drops I can play to, like not die to your stupid, like, Snapcaster Mage. So I think, like, having that card is very important for the Eldrazi decks. Just to, like, survive, like, not the land hate, because if, like, they see Blood Moon, like, they can just take Blood Moon if they can play that before turn 3. So it's a card that, like, can get around hate that like Tron doesn't really have access to. I mean, I guess they could play it, which I don't think would be a terrible idea. But I think the Eldrazi decks have a better chance of like playing against hate because like these will like lower their converted mana cost throughout the deck. So even if they play against, you know, a Crumble to Dust, Crumble to Dust actually might fuck them up pretty good. But I think having like a lower curve will like, it will suck to have to play against land hate, but like they're not playing like all 7, 8, and 10 drops where they can't like get out of that.
Right.
And then Storm Chaser Mage is kind of with the UR Delver. I think there'll be some tempo lists out there that might want to use this card. I don't know if it's any better than Abbott or Young Pyromancer. It's definitely not better than Snapcaster Mage, but there's some, might be some variation like we talked about before where that card might be, you know, an aggressive flyer that you want to like finish the game off quickly with.
Yeah. Cool. I've got Slip Through Space for the reasons that we previously mentioned with Infect and Delver and, you know, some of the tempo aggro decks. But my biggest one really is Flame Tendrils, which is the black colorless Devoid. All creatures get -2/-2, and then you exile them.
Yes.
Is a very versatile sideboard piece and can deal with things like all the Voice Resurgence in the Kiki Chord deck. It can deal with the Kitchen Finks. It can deal with every creature in the Burn deck. It can deal with Merfolk. If not, killing them, you know, making them small enough after combat where they're blocking or something and dealing with some of the lords and maybe having a little bit of domino effect in that deck, but seems to have a good place in Modern right now.
Okay. I like it. Shock to all Goblin Dark Dwellers.
Shock.
I don't even need to say anymore. I kind of ran it into the ground the entire episode.
Yeah.
Goblin Dark Dwellers.
So, Daryl, you're all in on Goblin Dark Dwellers. If that card does nothing next weekend, you're going to look like a sad panda.
I'm not going to be offended. like, there's some space to play. I don't know if it will be tier one. It's worth trying. But I'm all in on the G-O-double-D, the Goblin Dark Dwellers.
Where does the O come from? Goblin?
Yeah, the O comes from Goblin.
Goblin.
Clearly. Goblin Dark Dwellers.
Cool. That pairs well with another 5-mana Goblin spell. Kiki Jiki?
Yep. It's very good. Kiki, oh my god. So, you have not yet lived the dream until you've just...
You gotta run 5-mana Goblins dot deck.
Yeah, I might as well just play a Cavern of Souls in that deck and name Goblin.
Hey, that's not a bad idea.
Clearly.
Alright, cool. Well, I think that wraps it up. We'll have a kind of follow-up next week after the Pro Tour actually happens and we see...
See that I got Rafa stomped by thinking that Goblin Dark Dwellers is a sweet card. And
yeah, to be fair, you're putting like all your eggs in that basket.
I am. The basket's not that full. I've spread it out. I've got some Tarmogoyf. I've got some, you know, some Cryptic Command, some Kiki Chord. Goblin Dark Dwellers, I'm just all in on as the new card that sees a lot.
But you also like hated on Jund earlier in the cast, so I don't know where you expect to see Goblin Dark Dwellers.
Mardu, man. Mardu.
You think... So the Boom-Bust deck or the deck like you're playing?
Yeah, people will try and play the Boom-Bust deck.
All right, I see. Okay.
And it will beat all the big mana decks. And if you can control the burn decks, you can push them out of the game by like destroying all their lands and leaving them with nothing.
Yeah, good luck controlling the burn decks when you're playing like turn 2 Night's Whisper and things like that.
This is why you play Soulfire Grandmaster, so all your lightning bolts have a lifelink.
Lightning Helix is gain 6.
You yes.
Daryl, do you? You don't have Soulfire Grandmaster.
Not that list, but there have been multiple lists before that one that I played multiple Soulfire Grandmasters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you have it. We will see you next week. Bye.
Yep.
Bye.
Cardnock Life is proud to be a part of MTGcast.com. We can be reached at cardnocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website, and if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.